Thank you, Professor Mashourian, for those very kind comments, but I'm sure you exaggerate the truth there by a fair margin. But anyway, it's a pleasure to be here, and good afternoon to everybody. As Professor Mashourian said, the topic I want to talk to you today about is bank funding, and in particular, the conventional wisdom that has emerged since the crisis that banks should do more of their funding through deposits and less through debt markets. I want to focus in particular on how significant are the benefits of such a shift, how feasible is it for banks to shift their funding sources, what is the impact on banks' cost of funds, and what are the implications for the level of interest rates. Banks in Australia have a reasonably diverse funding base. Deposits account for 43% of funding. These are split fairly evenly between households and businesses. Domestic capital markets provide a further 19% of funding. And foreign capital markets, about 28%. Securitisation and equity account for 3% and 7% of funding, respectively. Since mid-2007, the share of banks' funding that has come from deposits has risen by about 5 percentage points, with the increases in both household and business deposits. Banks have used these funds to replace some of the short-term capital market debt that they had. The increased use of deposits has been evident in both the major banks and the regional banks. The foreign banks, in contrast, the foreign-owned banks, have experienced a fall in the proportion of their funding coming from deposits, and they've been relying more on funding from their offshore parents. It's usually assumed that deposits are a more stable form of funding than other sorts of funding. However, assessing the relative stability of banks' various funding sources is not straightforward, as there can be significant variation even within each funding category. For example, government-guaranteed deposits are stickier than non-guaranteed deposits. Household deposits tend to be stickier than corporate or institutional deposits. And internet deposits tend to be less stable than all other at-call deposits. The benefits of deposits over debt are also not always obvious. Deposits from corporates and other financial institutions, for example, are unlikely to be much more stable than short-term debt, particularly in a crisis. The behavioural maturity of a given funding source can also be very different from the contractual maturity, especially during financial crises. It is the behavioural maturity that matters most, and during a severe crisis, this can shorten significantly for many funding sources. This is because banks can come under pressure to allow term deposits to be redeemed early and to buy back short-term debt. While a bank could try to enforce the contractual maturity of its funding, the reality is that unless the bank is already in great difficulty, this would draw attention to itself and accentuate its problems. Another issue is that the behaviour of new depositors attracted through more competitive pricing may be very different from that of existing depositors. These new deposits are likely to be more price sensitive and less stable. The benefit in terms of funding stability that comes from increasing deposits through competitive pricing may therefore be somewhat illusory. There's a common perception that banks in Australia make less use of deposits to fund themselves than do banks in other countries. However, the difference between Australian banks and their overseas peers is sometimes exaggerated by inconsistencies in the data across countries. The Reserve Bank has put together some data on deposit funding for the major banks in Australia and those in a number of other developed economies. We've tried to make the data as consistent as possible, although they are probably still a long way from being fully consistent. Those of you who want to look at that data, though, you can find those in the version of this speech that's on the website. The data show that, contrary to popular perception, the share of funding from deposits for the major banks in Australia is similar to that in the major banks in Germany, Japan, the United Kingdom and the United States. Another commonly quoted metric used to support the case that Australian banks are underweight deposits is the relatively high ratio of loans to deposits in Australia. The ratio for the major banks in Australia is around 130%, whereas in most overseas countries, the ratio varies between 80% and 100%. However, as I have noted, this is not due to Australian banks having lower deposit funding. The high ratio of loans to deposits reflects differences in asset composition. Banks in Australia mainly have loans on the asset side of their balance sheet, whereas banks overseas often have large holdings of debt securities. This results in a higher ratio of loans to deposits in Australia. But rather than being a weakness, I would regard this as the strength of the Australian banks, because the events of the past couple of years have shown that securities can be just as risky, if not more risky, than loans. An individual bank has a large amount of discretion in the way it funds itself, as it can bid more aggressively for the type of deposits that it wants and compete them away from other banks. The banking sector as a whole, however, has very much less flexibility. For the banking sector as a whole to increase its deposit funding, it needs to be able to induce a shift in the structure of the financial system away from financing through capital markets to on-balance sheet funding through the banking sector. Put another way, for the banking sector as a whole, the share of deposits in total funding can only increase to the extent that investors reduce their holdings of securities and place those funds on deposit with the banks. The extent to which this can happen tends to be limited because the composition of the financial system is shaped by a range of structural, economic, and cultural factors, and these do not change quickly. In fact, the trend in most countries over time is for savings to move away from deposits towards debt securities and equities. To try to shift savings back to deposits would require a reversal of these trends, and there must be doubts about how feasible that would be. There's also the question of whether it is sensible from the point of view of the overall functioning of the economy and the financial system. As I've noted, over the past year, the Australian banks as a whole have managed some increase in the share of their funding coming from deposits. However, the bulk of this occurred during the period of high risk aversion late last year and early this year, when investor perceptions were that bank deposits were safer than debt securities and unit trusts. Over the past 6 months, as the risk appetite amongst investors has returned, the share of funding coming from deposits has stopped rising. It would seem the banks have largely exhausted the available opportunities to induce investors to increase their holdings of bank deposits. The so-called deposit war amongst banks is producing very attractive returns for depositors, but little benefit for the banking system as a whole in terms of increased deposit funding. The increased competition by banks for deposits has added substantially to their costs. It used to be the case that banks paid between 100 and 150 basis points less than the cash rate for deposits. Now they're paying interest rates that are on average in line with the cash rate. In the case of term deposit specials, which are the main vehicle through which banks are currently competing for deposits, interest rates can be as much as several hundred points above the cash rate. Since the start of the financial crisis in mid-2007, the cost of new deposits has risen on average by 147 basis points relative to the cash rate. This rise was mainly driven by an increase of 250 basis points in the relative cost of term deposits. In contrast, the cost of short-term debt has not changed much relative to the cash rate over that period, while the cost of new long-term debt has risen by 173 points relative to the cash rate. It is clear that the push by banks to increase the share of their funding that comes from deposits has added substantially to their costs. At the same time, the cost of long-term debt has also risen significantly relative to the cash rate because of the global crisis. These changes in banks' cost of funds relative to the cash rate have meant that the relationship between bank lending rates and the cash rate has also become looser. It is difficult for banks to adjust their lending rates in line with changes in the cash rate when the cost of their funds is rising substantially relative to the cash rate. We estimate that if banks had not adjusted their lending rates to reflect their higher cost of funds over the past couple of years, they would now be incurring losses. That would have threatened their ability to keep raising funds and, in turn, their capacity to lend. In the event, early in the crisis, banks did not pass on all the increase in their cost of funds, but recently, increases in lending rates have run ahead of the cost of funds. Banks' margins are now a little wider than they were at the start of the crisis and, on balance, therefore adding to profits. The margin between the cash rate and banks' lending rates receives considerable public attention. This is understandable because changes in it are very visible. This margin, however, can change for many reasons, and so it's very difficult to interpret. A wider margin, for example, might be due to banks making unjustified increases in their lending rates, or it may reflect market developments that have pushed up banks' cost of funds relative to the cash rate. Some have argued that the variability in this margin means that monetary policy is now less effective. This, however, misses a very important point that the Reserve Bank takes account of the change in relativities between the cash rate and other interest rates when setting the cash rate. Other things equal, if interest rates in the economy are rising relative to the cash rate, there's less need for the cash rate to rise. The more relevant margin is that between the average interest rate on bank loans and the average cost of funds used by banks to finance those loans. This is usually referred to as banks' net interest margin. Between 2000 and 2007, the net interest margin of the major banks had narrowed by about 100 basis points. This was driven by competition and was made possible by sizable reductions in banks' operating costs over that period, as this allowed banks to continue operating profitably despite falling margins. As I've mentioned, early in the financial crisis, banks' net interest margin was squeezed further as the cost of funds rose sharply and banks did not fully pass this on to interest rates on loans. Over the past year or so, however, margins have widened again and they are now about 20 basis points above pre-crisis levels. This recent widening in the net interest margin has been mainly due to wider margins on banks' business lending. The margin on variable rate housing loans is much the same today as it was at the start of the crisis. It had fallen until recently, and the increase in housing interest rates in December restored it to its pre-crisis level. Margins on business loans, however, are now substantially higher than they were immediately before the crisis. This comes after a prolonged period when margins on business loans had narrowed. Margins on business loans tend to vary over the economic cycle, reflecting changes in perceptions of risk by banks. During periods of a strong economy, banks tend to cut their margins as they see business loans as being less risky. In contrast, when the economic and business outlook is uncertain and loan losses are rising, as has been the case over the past couple of years, banks see loans as being more risky and widen their margins. With the economy and business climate now improving, the economic justification for wider margins on loans is becoming less compelling. It would therefore be reasonable to assume that in a competitive banking sector, we should see margins start to level out soon. In fact, over the past couple of months, there have been some signs that this is starting to occur. As I've noted, over the past couple of years, the interest rates that matter in the economy, that is, the interest rates on housing loans and business loans, the interest rates on deposits, and those on debt securities, have all risen relative to the cash rate. The Reserve Bank has taken this into account in setting the cash rate, that is, in the monetary policy decisions it has taken. One of the implications of doing so, however, is that it has altered the relativity of the cash rate compared with its historical ranges. I want to end with a few words on this and what it means for the interpretation of monetary policy settings. As you know, the cash rate is currently 3.75%. This is still 50 basis points below the previous cyclical low of 4.25% in 2001. On the surface, this might suggest that the cash rate is still unusually low. However, with other interest rates in the economy having risen by at least 100 points relative to the cash rate over those couple of years, they are now above their previous cyclical lows. Another way to think about this is that the current level of deposit rates, housing loan rates and business rates would have been consistent before the crisis with a cash rate of at least 4.75%. Taking these considerations into account, it would be reasonable to conclude that the overall stance of monetary policy is now back in the normal range, though in the expansionary segment of the range. The appropriateness of this will continue to be monitored by the Reserve Bank in the months ahead in the light of the data becoming available on economic activity and inflation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Battaglino, Dow Jones here. Just in the context of your speech, are you expecting that the retail banks might hike their own mortgage rates on top of any further official moves, or is there some chance that the retail banks might move outside of any official move by the RBA? Thanks.
Well, the decisions on interest rates that banks charge are really matters for the management and the boards of those banks. And in setting those decisions, they take account of a lot of different factors. So it's not possible for me to predict how banks are going to react to that. As I've said in the talk, over the past couple of years, banks have raised their interest rates more than the cash rate. That's basically been because of rises in their cost of funds relative to the cash rate. What happens going forward, it's not clear. That will depend on how the markets move for various types of funds.
Rick, John Roth from the Daily Telegraph. You spent some time in your speech talking about business lending rates, and I'd just like to ask you about that. What would you see as the effect on the Australian economy if banks didn't reduce the margin that they're currently charging on business lending?
Well, as I said, the margin on business loans tends to vary over the economic cycle, and we went through a period from most of the early part of this decade when margins on business loans contracted quite sharply. And in fact, you would know that some of the commentary from overseas countries is that one of the causes of the crisis is that banks became too aggressive in marketing business loans and they were underpricing risk. Now, that's changed through the crisis as banks became more risk averse and, you know, they've added substantially to their margins. With the economic outlook improving, as I say, I think that it's reasonable to assume that those margins will level out from here. But demand for credit by businesses hasn't been all that strong of late because businesses have had a lot of cash stockpiled away as well. Obviously, that's not evenly distributed through the business community, but on average... The business community has had a lot of cash and they've been using that to fund themselves rather than going to loans from banks. They've also, businesses have been relying more on equity to fund themselves and, as Craig said, we're starting to see them more into the debt markets, capital markets as well.
So just to clarify that, you don't think that it has the effect of holding back the economy in general if businesses can't afford the rates that the banks are charging?
Well, if businesses can't afford the rates that a bank are charging, the demand for those loans will fall and, banks will have to reconsider their margins. Basically, it's an interaction between the customer and the bank.
And you are saying that demand has fallen?
Well, up until the last couple of years, or particularly over the past year, demand for loans has fallen because a lot of businesses have taken the opportunity of the strength in the equity markets in particular to raise equity and repay debt, particularly bank loans.
Thanks.
Mr. Battaglino, Kai Chow from the Sky News Business Channel. You've noted that the banks seem to are almost justified in increasing rates if their margins aren't the same. But we're seeing different behaviour amongst the different lenders now. How much of a challenge does that present you in terms of the effectiveness of monetary policy if it seems there's going to be, if the banks really seem intent on competing with each other and really making the amount of interest rate changes they pass on quite unpredictable?
Well, I think it's fair enough that banks do charge different interest rates. There's no reason why. I think it would be somewhat worrying if all the banks are charging the same interest rate. I think the fact that they're charging different interest rates suggests there's an element of competition in the market. In setting monetary policy, we take account of the averages across all the banks and work on that basis. I don't think that's a particular issue for us.
I meant the fact that they're changing their rates by different amounts when the official cash rate changes.
But that, as I say, that doesn't necessarily worry us a great deal in setting monetary policy because we take account of those change in relativities between what the banks are charging and what the cash rate is in setting the cash rate. So over time, all these things are neutralised.
Hi, Jan Levitz, La Trobe University. I'd like to ask you something in regards to monetary policy in the United States, which obviously has important spillover effects onto Australian monetary policy. There's been a lot of talk about the exit strategy of the Fed, given that its balance sheet has more than doubled over the last couple of years. How do you see the future here? Are you kind of concerned that there could be some problems there in terms of inflation, or are you confident that they'll be able to handle the situation when the economy recovers?
Well, I am not really in a position to comment on US monetary policy. The Fed knows much more about that than I do, so I'll leave it to the Fed to work that out. From a technical point of view, there's no problems for central banks getting out of all the extraordinary measures they did. There's plenty of capacity to do that. They can do it simultaneously with rising rates. They can do it sequentially. The technical aspect of it is does not pose any problems. The issue, as always for central banks, is being able to see where the economy is heading and making timely adjustments to take account of that.
Owen Blackwell from AAP. In yesterday's minutes, the central bank said that the latest interest rate decision was finally balanced between signs of an improving economy and a potential blow to confidence. In light of today's GDP numbers, the economy grew by 0.2% in the September quarter. Would the bank be concerned about further interest rate rises going forward as a potential blow to confidence?
The next board meeting of the bank is in February, and there's a significant amount of data to become available in the period since then. So I think all we can do is wait to see how that data goes and make the decisions then. Every decision of the bank is finely balanced, because if it wasn't, it would suggest that we were in the wrong spot to start off with. So, we shouldn't be too surprised to hear that decisions are finely balanced. If we're doing our job properly, most of them will be line ball decisions.
Angela Lavoie-Pierre from the ABC. Today's GDP figures show weak growth in the third quarter, and the RBA has put up interest rates three times since the end of that quarter. Have you moved too aggressively, given that most of the growth in the September quarter seems to be a result of government stimulus spending?
Well, I haven't had a chance to analyse the National Accounts, because they've come out since I've been here. But I think those figures were more or less in line with what we were expecting. So I'm not particularly surprised, and I don't think it casts any new light on the decisions that we've taken. I think the rationale for our decisions have been well spelled out. We were at interest rates that were unusually low by our standards, and that we put those interest rates in place when the outlook for the economy this time last year and early in the year was very uncertain, and it's become very clear the economy has done much better than we thought at the time we set those interest rates. So it's logical that those interest rate cuts be taken back to some extent. So that's what we did. And so I think, as I say, those results today wouldn't change that thinking at all.
Katja Bura from the Australian Financial Review. Do you think that the oversized interest rate rises by some of the major banks over the past couple of weeks are justified given their increased funding costs?
Well, you know, in the short term, it's very hard to know what's happening, you know, week to week with banks' funding costs because only they know that. As I said, over the long sweep of a couple of years, interest rates on average on housing loans haven't changed at all. They're basically the same. The margin now is the same as it was 2 years ago. There's been as a lot of controversy about the Westpac moves. The situation facing Westpac is that it was increasing its loans at, you know, virtually double the rate of the other banks. And it's pretty clear to a bank that that's not sustainable. So in some ways, you know, I'm not surprised that they raised their rates more than other banks because, you know, they would have been looking to some extent to price themselves away from the margin, from the market, to sort of rebalance their market share to some extent.
Rick, I'd just like to ask a follow-up question on that point you've just made about Westpac. Are you saying that their customers are paying for the executive team's mistake in letting that balance sheet get out of whack?
No, I think what I'm saying is that at the previous interest rate, when they were charging the same interest rate as everybody else, their staff or their salespeople seem to be able to sell twice as many loans as the other banks. Now, the reason why they're doing that, I'm not sure. Maybe they did have a better service or better product. And but that was not, a bank cannot grow at twice the rate of every other bank continuously.
And so why isn't that the case, that the customers are paying for them letting that get out of, the proportions become out of whack?
Well, I'm not sure why we would see it like that, because the customers, you know, obviously there's something about those loans that Westpac was making that the customers found very attractive. If that situation changes, well, then it's up to the customer to react.
Hi, I'm Eben Van Wyk from Royal Bank of Scotland. Hi.
Yes, sure.
Given the recent stimulus that was given to the economy, do you think that would lead to a higher inflationary environment going forward?
You're talking about Australia here, or?
Yeah, Australia, I guess, is my question, but I guess it also applies to other world economies.
Well, here in Australia, we've, you know, inflation did move above the target, as you know, the last couple of years, and it's coming back into the target now. We're still thinking that the inflation rate will fall further over the next year or so and be well within the target this year. Having said that, with the economy picking up, it is possible that, you know, over the next, if you look out 3 or 4 years, inflation will be rising again, and that's part of the reason why the bank is repositioning the level of interest rates, because we have to look ahead as to what's happening to inflation. And the economy, you know, the downturn in the economy here was fairly mild. The spare capacity in the economy is relatively limited, and we're heading back into a recovery phase with little spare capacity. And so that has to be managed very carefully.
Katja from the Financial Review again. Are you at all concerned about the increased reliance of the banks upon deposit funding?
Well, it's I'm not concerned about it, but I think they have to be realistic in terms of how much more they can do in terms of shifting their funding to deposits, because it seems to me they've pretty well exhausted all the opportunities that were there. The marginal customers who are prepared to move out of securities into deposits have done so. And over the past 6 months or so, the extra interest rates, the very attractive interest rates that banks are offering on deposits, have produced no net benefit to the banks in terms of extra funding. And so I think the banks as a group need to recognise that.